Namo myoho renge kyo. Hi, friends. How are you? Thank you for your practice. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your support. Take a second to like and subscribe. It's a bodhisattva act. It helps propagate. Having addressed bodhisattva Sarvarupasamdarsana in this way, the Buddha entered Parinirvana in the last watch of that night. Not Shakyamuni, this previous Buddha that we've been talking about, yeah? Whose name is twice as long. Thereupon, having seen the Buddha's Parinirvana, Bodhisattva... what did we say this Bodhisattva's name was? Oh, yeah, Medicine King. Well, that's... No, that's not the same one. Anyway, this Bodhisattva, Sarvarupasamdarsana, was grieved and saddened and longed and yearned for the Buddha. Having prepared a pyre with sandalwood from the inner seacoast of Mount Sumeru, he cremated the Buddha's body in homage. After the fire had gone out, he collected all the relics. He had 84,000 jeweled urns made up and erected 84,000 stupas as high as three worlds. They were adorned with poles from which he hung all kinds of banners and canopies and various kinds of jeweled belts. Then the Bodhisattva Sarvarupasamdarsana thought this: although I have paid tribute in this way, I am not yet satisfied. I will now further pay homage to the relics, to whatever's left of the cremation, right? Then he spoke to all the great assemblies of bodhisattvas, great shavakas, devas, nagas, and yakshas, saying, "You should pay full attention. I will now pay homage to the relics of the Buddha, Kandrasurya Vimalapa Prabhasastri." Well, I gave it a shot. Having said these words, he made an offering before the 84,000 stupas by burning his arms adorned with hundreds of merits of 72,000 years. He thus made immeasurable sravakas and immeasurable incalculable people set forth toward highest complete enlightenment. All of them were made to dwell in the samadhi called Sarvarupasamdarsana. At that time, all the bodhisattvas, devas, humans, and asuras saw that his arms were missing and became grieved and distressed. They said, "The bodhisattva Sarvarupasamdarsana is our teacher. He has led and inspired us. He has now burned his arms and his body is deformed." Of course, I've already told you, and I'll remind you in this chat, that the burning of his arms was simply the spreading of the teachings of the Lotus Sutra as a light, the light given off, right? He set himself alight, just like the Shakyamuni Buddha image of the ray of light coming from the tuft of hair between his eyes, yes? He was mentally projecting enlightenment to these people. So he didn't actually burn his arms up, but we have this constant thread throughout Buddhism of having a dedication so strong that we care not for our own safety, right? We talk about this in modern terms, right? Without concern for her own safety, she ran out into the street to save her child, right? She wasn't willing to die with a car hitting her so she could save her daughter. It's just that she was so committed to saving her daughter that any care, any value, any distraction of self-preservation was negated because her overarching goal was so strong to achieve saving her daughter. This is the kind of commitment that Shakyamuni and other bodhisattvas over the centuries, certainly Nichiren, reminds us constantly: you must single-mindedly contemplate Buddha. If you're going to achieve enlightenment, you can't play Buddhism. You have to commit. So the level of commitment is very, very, very serious. Yes? So we don't go burning ourselves up saying, my body doesn't matter. No, because when you do that, you're in samsara. You're not attaining enlightenment. You're attaining abjugation of your body. For what reason? It's not about the body. It's about the commitment to something that's so strong that the body becomes irrelevant. But that doesn't mean you actively destroy it. You follow? It's subtle, but it's very, very profound. This has been misinterpreted for centuries, so this is why I may be belaboring the point, okay? Then Bodhisattva Sarva Rupasamdarsana made a vow and said to the great assembly, I have abandoned both my arms, and I shall definitely attain the golden body of the Buddha. If this is true and not false, then may both arms be restored as before. See, it's a little magical, but for the people of the day, this was a meaningful tale, yes? A skillful means. Because this bodhisattva was endowed with profound merit and wisdom, after he had made this vow, his arms recovered spontaneously. Now do you understand that this is a fable? This is a story to illustrate that the mother, having gone and saved her child in the middle of the road, suddenly was unharmed by the car that would have previously smashed her? Because it never did. It was her will, her volition, her single-minded action returned her to her motherhood body so she could now care for the child she just saved. That's the story, right? At that very time, the great manifold cosmos quaked in six ways. It rained jeweled flowers from the heavens, and all the devas and humans experienced an unprecedented marvel. The Buddha addressed Bodhisattva Nakasatra Rajasmakusam Mitabani Bajni, saying, what do you think about this? Is Bodhisattva Sarvapudasam Darsana someone unknown to you? Is he none other than Bodhisattva Medicine King? He undertook the practice of giving by abandoning his body immeasurable hundreds of thousands of myriads of kotas and nayutas of times in this way. In other words, in his adamant, single-minded practice of contemplating Buddha, he surpassed his attachments to bodily, the skandhas, pleasures. This is the repeated message. These are instructions for us, instructions for bodhisattvas, the right mindset to have. You don't need to go light your arms on fire. Because if you do, I guarantee you, they won't reappear. That's not the point. Right? He undertook the practices of bending in body measurable times. Oh, Nakshatra, and I'm going to stop there. If there is anyone who sets forth and wishes to attain highest complete enlightenment, he should pay homage to the stupas of the Buddha by burning either a finger or a toe. Not literally. He is superior to those whom pay homage by giving their countries and cities, their wives and children, or the mountains, forests, rivers, ponds, and many other rare treasures. Why does he say that? When we live in samsara, we live in a condition where everything we experience is a reflection of, an homage, a worshiping, really, of our body. Because we perceive ourselves bodily. Every religion on the planet is based on the body, right? Whether ending your life brings you 72 virgins, or whether atoning and suffering through this life then brings you closer to a God or a this or a that. It's all of these rituals are, and generally afterlife is where you get any kind of joy. So this life is all about suffering. But in Buddhism, we recognize that this life is a condition of suffering, and we escape it in this life, pragmatically, right? We don't look to something that doesn't exist, that afterlife thing. We pragmatically, Buddhists, live this life to the full because this is it. Our only purpose for being here is to do so. But religions, or what you know, we would classify as religion, are based on things unprovable, unexperienceable, and they put off until nobody can check, so that you just suffer through this life. They either create more rituals to suffer more deeply, like the self-prostration and all of that craziness, right? And it's no different in traditions of countries in Asia who turned Buddhism into religions. But Siddhartha's mission before he ever attained enlightenment was, look at all this suffering. People shouldn't have to live this way. They shouldn't have to experience this stress and anxiety. Sure, people get sick. I'm a prince. I got sick. But I had people attending to me, and I kept my spirits up. And, you know, life wasn't so hard. But for these people out here, these poor people who don't have all of the privilege that I do, there's got to be a way for them to experience it as well. It took him 12 years of tremendous trials he put on himself to finally figure out that all of this, whether you're a prince or a pauper, this experience occurs in the mind. Aha! So no matter if you're a prince or a pauper, because believe me, there are plenty of princes out there who are suffering like hell. The way you experience your life is up to your mind. How does it construct the true value of life that can put aside the vicissitudes of socioeconomic troubles and health and other stuff? Because this life is the life. It's the only life. And so best to live it to its fullest potential, yes? That's why we're Buddhists. That's not religion. That's a mindset. That's a profound understanding of the process of life. What you've heard me call the engine of life. Because once you get to that profound place, everything works this way. You don't have to convince yourself that you're a special thing. The entire cosmos is acting this process out. We're just another one of those processes. How amazing. That's Buddhism. So to chase after that knowing, that is Buddha, okay, not a person, that state of knowing, of understanding, of being with the process of the engine of life, that is Buddha. And that is what we single-mindedly focus on attaining, achieving, experiencing. That's the Dharma. So when he says these things about, you know, you can give homage by offering any amount of wealth. Like the Dragon King's daughter offered some rock jewel she had with her, right? Somebody else offered Shakyamuni a mud pie. It doesn't matter what the gift is, because the gift is samsaric. It pales in comparison to the attitude and the intent of being one with Buddha. That's so far and away. That is the paradigm shift. From samsara to Buddha, samsara to Buddha. Everything else, you give your wife, give your children, give your husband, give even giving your life, which would be a horrible error, because as soon as you do that, you no longer have the ability to live in Buddha. This is why suicide is looked upon very, very profoundly sad, right, in Buddhism. Not because you ended your life, but you ended your sentience and your mind to experience Buddha, which was your whole purpose for being here in the first place. Follow? So if there's anyone who pays homage to all the Buddhas, great Bodhisattvas, Pratyeka Buddhas, and Arhats, and by filling the great manifold cosmos with the seven precious treasures, Namo Myoho Renge Kyo, the merit of this person will not be equal to the surpassing merit of one who receives and holds to even a single verse consisting of four lines of the Lotus Sutra. O Nakasastra, just as the ocean is the greatest of streams and rivers and of all waters, this Lotus Sutra is the most profound of the sutras taught by the Tathagatas. Just as Mount Sumeru is the greatest of mountains, greater than Earth Mountain, Black Mountain, Mount Kakravada, Mount Mahakrakravada, and the Ten Jeweled Mountains, this Lotus Sutra is the greatest of the sutras. Just as the moon is the greatest among all the stars, we know the moon isn't the stars, but as far as heavenly bodies, it is far greater in size and luminosity than these distant stars, right? We're not talking about astrophysics here. We're talking about representations, right? Just as this Lotus Sutra is the most illuminating of the thousands of codices of sutras. Just as the sun destroys darkness in the same way, this sutra destroys darkness of erring thought. Just as the noble emperor is the best of all the kings, this sutra is the noblest of all sutras. Just as Chakra is the king of the 33 devas, this sutra is the king of sutras. Just as great Brahma is the father of all sentient beings, in the same way, this sutra is the father of all the wise, the noble, those who have more to learn and those who do not, and those in whom the thought of enlightenment has awakened. Just as those who have entered the stream of the teachings, the Srotapanas, those who are to return to this world once again, Sakradagamins, those who are never to return, Anagamins, Arhats and Pratyeka Buddhas, are the best of all the common people. In the same way, this is the best of all the sutras taught by all the Tathagatas, Bodhisattvas, or Sravakas. I think the point is being made, yeah? Those who hold this sutra to this sutra are the best of all sentient beings. The Bodhisattvas are the best of all Sravakas and Pratyeka Buddhas. In the same way, this sutra is the best of all sutras. Just as the Buddha is the king of the Dharma, this sutra is the king of the sutras. O Nakasastra, I've shortened his name just for the sake of my sanity. This sutra saves all sentient beings. This sutra makes all sentient beings free from suffering. Does that mean you'll never stub your toe again? No. It means your attitude, experience, and intent, your attitude and intent will carry you right past that, and you won't become distracted by it, obsessed by it, and sucked into it. Samsara goes on. It must go on because it's the only way you and I can be bodhisattvas, which is the whole entire goal of this practice. If you haven't picked up on that yet, right? Buddha is a state of mind only experienced in samsara, with this sentient mind. Once we die, that sentient mind is no more. No Buddha-ness. The universe, the cosmos, just goes on. The engine of life is just plodding away. Our foremost and only purpose for being human with a sentient mind is to witness this and experience it to the full. There is no higher course for your life other than sharing this very truth with others. That's why to be a bodhisattva is a tremendous mission. It's not easy. But through its single-minded effort, changes everything. Ends world wars. Ends the experience of suffering. Right? Samsara goes on. The streams continue. Water falls from the sky as rain. Right? Unless we figure out how to end that. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. This sutra greatly benefits all sentient beings and brings their aspirations to fulfillment. There's the word, aspirations. That's what we were talking about. Just as a clear, cool pond satisfies the thirsty, as a fire satisfies those suffering from cold, as clothes for the naked, as a caravan leader for merchants, as a mother for her children, as a boat for the traveler, as a physician for the sick, as a lamp for the gloom, as a treasure for the poor, as a king for the people, as the sea for traders, and a torch for those in darkness. In the same way, this Lotus Sutra frees sentient beings from every suffering. All the pains and bonds of illness and of birth and of death. Right back to the start, right? Gotta figure out a way to deal with birth, sickness, old age, death. These are the processes of samsara. How can we lift our minds away from experiencing the negativities of that and just let that be the process that we build a sentience on that's disconnected from it, that is constantly focused on this amazing process of life? How do we do that? Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. By keeping our Buddha-ness awake and present in every single moment, just as Nichiren said. If there is anyone who hears this Lotus Sutra, copies it, or moves others to copy it, their merit will be limitless even if it is measured through the Buddha's wisdom. If there is anyone who copies it and pays it tribute with flowers, perfumes, necklaces, burning incense, scented powders, fragrant ointments, banners, canopies, clothes, various kinds of ghee lamps, oil lamps, fragrant oil lamps, lamps of oil made from kampaka, sumanas, patala, Varsika, and Navamalika trees, that person's merit will also be immeasurable. If there is anyone who hears this chapter, ancient accounts of Bodhisattva Medicine King, they will attain immeasurable and limitless merit, if they understand it properly. If there's any woman who hears and holds to this chapter, ancient accounts of Bodhisattva Medicine King, she will never be reborn with a female body. Well, there's that misogyny again. If there is any woman 500 years after the Parinirvana of the Tathagata who hears this sutra and practices according to the teachings, she will immediately reach the dwelling of the Buddha Amitabha, or Amitabha. You know about Amida Buddha, yeah? In the Sukhavati world, surrounded by great bodhisattvas, and will be born on a jeweled seat in a lotus flower, never again troubled by the three poisons of greed, anger, or ignorance, by arrogance or jealousy. He will attain the Bodhisattva's transcendent powers and acceptance of the non-origination of all dharmas. After attaining this acceptance, his faculty of sight will be pure, and with this pure eye faculty, he will see all the Buddha Tathagatas equal in number to the sands of 72 million Kotas of Nayutas of Ganges River. Did you see the sex change there, by the way? I'm sure you picked up on that. He went from a woman to he, because that's the transmigration that allows for these ancient peoples to understand their misogyny in terms of their practice. It's slippery, I know, but, you know, this is 3,000 years old. Well, almost. At that time, the Buddha will praise him from afar, saying, "Splendid, splendid son of a virtuous family, you have preserved, recited, and contemplated this sutra from the teachings of the Buddha Shakyamuni and taught it to others. The merit you have obtained is immeasurable and limitless. Even fire cannot burn it. Even water cannot wash it away. Even thousands of Buddhas cannot give it a complete description of your merit. You have already destroyed the maras, the samsaric illusions, right? The attachments to the physical world. You have already conquered the armies of birth and death." The armies of birth and death, what do you think that means? If we live moment to moment, as Buddhism says, and each moment is a cycle, how many moments have we experienced in the time of this chat? Innumerable. Armies of moments. Follow? Armies because of their influence, right? 3,000 realms in every single thought moment. It's a lot of influence. So how were you going to direct your army of moments? Boy, that couldn't be more appropriate than today. O son of virtue of... You have already conquered the armies of birth and death. You have defeated all enemies. Bad influences. O son of virtuous family, hundreds of thousands of Buddhas together protect you with their transcendent powers. There is no one equal to you among the devas and humans of the entire world, with the exception of the Tathagata, the wisdom and meditation of all Shravakas, Pratyeka Buddhas, and Bodhisattvas can never equal yours. Simply because you've taught and raised another into this Lotus Sutra. That's the merit of propagation, of bodhisattva work. O Nakshastra, such is the power of the merit and wisdom that this bodhisattva has perfected. If there is anyone who hears this chapter, ancient accounts of bodhisattva medicine king. And again, he's referring to the level of dedication. That doesn't consciously say, I don't care about myself, because that's samsaric, but consciously is so driven to awaken Buddha-ness that the very considerations of anything else having to be put aside, it doesn't even appear. I'm trying to make this really abundantly clear. Help me out. Ask me in the comments if I'm not. I think you know what I mean. If you hear this chapter and you rejoice in it, you understand the level of commitment, the single-mindedness, and praise it well, in his present life he will always exhale the fragrance of blue lotus flowers from his mouth and will always emit the fragrance of sandalwood on Mount Ox head from his pores. The benefits of the qualities he has obtained are just as mentioned above. For this reason, O Nakshastra, I will entrust you with this chapter, ancient accounts of the Bodhisattva Medicine King. During the period of 500 years after my parinirvana, you must spread it far and wide in Jambudvipa and not allow it to be destroyed. You must not give Mara and his men or the devas and nagas, yakshas and kumbanda demons any chance of destroying it. You should protect this sutra with your transcendent power. Why is this? Because this sutra is good medicine for the ills of the people of Jambudvipa. If there is any sick person who hears this sutra, his illness will disappear and he will neither die nor grow old. If you see anyone who holds this sutra, you should scatter blue lotus flowers full of scented powder on him. And scattering them, you should think like this. This man will before long destroy the army of Mara. Sitting on the grass-covered terrace of enlightenment, he will blow the conch of the Dharma, beat the drum of the great Dharma, and ferry all sentient beings across the ocean of old age, illness, and death. Therefore, if those seeking the Buddha path see those who hold on to this sutra, the thought of respect should awaken in them. When this chapter, Ancient Accounts of the Bodhisattva Medicine King, was being taught, 84,000 bodhisattvas attained the dharani of understanding the speech of sentient beings. And dharani is the next word we're going to talk about in Buddhism reference. Yeah, so stay tuned for that video. The Tathagata Prabhutaratna in the jeweled stupa praised Bodhisattva Nakasastra, big long name, saying, "Splendid, splendid, O Nakasastra, you have attained marvelous merit, for you have question the Buddha Shakyamuni about these things and benefit all of the immeasurable numbers of sentient beings by asking your prescient question." Yeah. And that ends the chapter on the Medicine King. So an incredibly vital chapter. Nonetheless, the chapter, if you've noticed as it closed, said this will be the teaching to put forth in the first 500 years after my passing. We are now over 2,500 years after his passing. We are in the fifth 500-year period, said to last 10,000 years. So our mission is different. Our mission isn't to spread the teachings of Medicine King. It is to understand the teachings of Medicine King. It is to for us to understand the Medicine King's moral of how to dedicate our minds when we chant to our mandala, Namo Myoho Renge Kyo, that our only focus, our only thought is on awakening Buddha. Nothing else. And through that effort, we can experience all of this great merit. So the lesson of Bodhisattva Medicine King, certainly important to our understanding of our mental dedication, right? Our intent, our attitude. But we are in the time period when we are spreading the Lotus Sutra, the Myoho Renge Kyo. That's our mission. For this time, it is the only medicine that will cure all delusion. Right? 2,000 years ago, understanding the dedicative power of the mind that the Medicine King chapter teaches was vital for keeping the practice of Buddhism alive. But today, it's not enough. It's just an understanding within the greater practice of Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. You know? So, not irrelevant. I mean, it is in the Lotus Sutra after all, but it's very keenly parameterized by Shakyamuni himself. Okay? I hope all of that makes sense. I really do, because this is... This is one that I've done many videos about in different ways, because it has spawned other traditions that even to this day has entire traditions, schools of thought in China and perhaps in Japan. I'm not that aware of how it works in Japan, but I know that there are sects in China that still to this day think in this way. And there are some sects of Theravada Buddhism that still see Bodhisattva Medicine King as some sort of transcendent samsaric thing. And that's so painful to say, because they don't really get it. And it leads to some very tragic ends, yeah. So I don't want to, I shouldn't have got into that again, but it concerns me a great deal. Our lives are so incredibly precious, if only for a moment, to conceive of the Buddha in our sentient minds. Namo Myōhren-gyō. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your support, liking and subscribing, of course. If you can do more, you know, ebooks, print books, PayPal, Patreon, all portals for you to have different modes of support. It's incredibly valuable, and I'm incredibly grateful, or I should say credibly grateful, language. All of us are grateful for the support, aren't we? Let's keep growing this sangha, this resource. Keep your practice strong. Take care of your health. And I'll see you in the next one. Promise. All right. Bye for now.